Yeah, that'd be great. I guess because I couldn't hear you.
Okay.
You said that. Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Good morning. We're going to call this meeting to order at 10:06, or sorry, 11:06. Can we get a roll call, please?
Yes. Chair Ryan?
Present.
Vice Chair Benson?
Present.
Secretary Manny?
Present.
Member Templeton?
Present.
Member Fole?
Present.
Member Rutherford? Member Baldwin?
Present.
Member Maury?
Present.
Member Freeman? Freeman. Thank you.
Okay, I think, are we due for any introductions? I feel like everybody knows each other. Welcome. Congratulations.
Yeah, we do. Sorry, we do have one introduction. Wes Maury will join us as our second Santa Cruz, City of Santa Cruz representative, and then Emily Feenan, thank you for being here.
Thank you. All right, considerations for any late additions or changes to the agenda?
Yes, we have just a couple of little items. There was a typo, so we've corrected the title for item 13. It previously read item 12 when the packet was published. And then we've also added just a simple and not very pretty slide to the budget slide deck that just shows the annual error adjustments for each member. So those are the two changes that were made to the packet as published.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll move on to oral communications. Any person may address the Santa Cruz County Animal Shelter Board of Directors during the oral communications period. All oral communications should be directed to items or issues that would be within the jurisdiction of the Santa Cruz County Animal Shelter, but not on today's agenda. Board members will not take actions or respond immediately to oral communications presented, but may choose to follow up either individually or on a subsequent agenda. Would you like a microphone?
Oh, no, that's okay. Hopefully you can all hear me. Yeah.
Project.
Yeah, thank you. Gary Vincomo, I'm the Vice President and Board of Directors of Santa Cruz County Animal Shelter Foundation. Given our role as a strategic partner with the JPA and the shelter, the foundation is committed to working with this board to continue to sustain and improve our impact in that world. Now, with that in mind, I'd like to provide and discuss our most recent efforts and results in support of the shelter. Over the last 12 months, the foundation has raised over $700,000. We have given almost $400,000 to the shelter. Hopefully, as you all know, we have ongoing extensive countywide outreach efforts. However, a year or so ago, the board made a strategic decision that we wanted to renew our investment, particularly in South County, because we saw an opportunity and a need to address what we consider the underserved community of our South County residents. So I'd like to just highlight some of those South County efforts that I take very briefly. Those include our work with the Watsonville Law Center, where we assist in providing design and language used in informational materials that they provide to their undocumented clients around designating emergency or temporary care for their pets, should they have an emergency situation where their life has suddenly changed and having to move or relocate or something like that. These materials emphasize surrender as a last resort with the goal of reducing abandonment. Pardon me. We also fund and work with our animal control officers to provide vouchers which are redeemable for low-cost spay and neuter services. We partner with our partner organization, Watsonville FOAS, Friends of Watsonville Animal Shelter, to provide those services to folks in need, financial need. We are regular participants now in the Watsonville Farmers Market. We have an information table. that is manned by our Promotores team. These are local folks that we employ and train to promote our services, including our healthy pets, all clinic vaccinations, or state-of-the-art vaccinations, etc. We are active members of the Parra Valley Chamber of Commerce, where we look to engage the community and business to engage and promote the shelter. One example of that, our next event is with the chamber, is with the Watsonville YMCA that's coming up, where we're going to the Foundation's Humane Education Coordinator will be there, and we'll be looking for opportunities to engage children and families with that population. In addition to the farmers markets, we're involved with Parra Valley Community of Service Award, Community Awards. We'll be participating in the PUP Parade with the Cranick Senior Center, and we're on ongoing participant at the Strawberry Festival, where we have a information table. And we also use our Promotores team for that table as well. The foundation has worked incredibly hard to create opportunities to make a bigger impact in our community, as evidenced by the success in our fundraising and the public awareness efforts that we engage in. However, our role is not to be, if you will, the gap filler for the structural deficit in the shelter budget. We have to depend on this board to step up and cover the basics of the shelter, like staffing, shelter operations, public safety, animal protection. That's not the role of the shelter. That's the role of the sport, and we need that system support to step up in that role. Thank you very much. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay.
Yes.
Seeing none, no more comments. We will move on to the consent agenda items. We have 10 consent agenda items. Can I get a motion to approve consent agenda? Or are there any comments or questions about the consent agenda items? Any comments or questions about the agenda items? Seeing none, we have a motion to approve. We have a motion. In a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? Seeing none.
Motion.
Okay, we are going to move to the regular agenda items. Item 15, strategic plan, presented by the consultant, Sarah Cohen.
Hi, good morning. One sec. I'm going to stand here so I can be near the recorder and you can see and not have to look through me. Good morning, I'm Sarah Cohen. I've been working with the animal shelter over the last couple of months on the strategic plan. And so today, I'm excited to share with you a draft for your feedback in advance of getting additional feedback from the community. So I'd like to start out by walking you through the process that we've engaged in over the last few months. To start, we are focused on a situated strategic plan. The pyramid structure means that mission, vision, and values for the animal shelter are the basis for the work that we've done together. Once we had worked on a mission, vision, values statement, we then started developing strategic priorities. Those will ultimately inform work going forward. So today I will show you the mission, vision, value, and the draft strategic priorities and objectives. The work, that comes later. Briefly, the process that we've gone through has revolved around four questions. First is, what is important to us? That helps us inform our mission, vision, and values. The where do we want to go is setting that strategic direction. What do we need to get there is taking a hard look at our capacity and in what way we can advance these priorities with current and potential resources. Coming forward, we'll be engaging in the question of what are we committing to, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. Throughout the process, input has been vital. It is from you today, and continues to be from the community moving forward. I'll come back to that in a second, too. So what has input looked like so far? I've had more than a dozen conversations with stakeholders of the animal shelter. That's included current and past JPA board members, volunteers to the shelter, foundation, partners both in the veterinary community and other local nonprofits, staff, and the administration of the animal shelter. From these conversations, we developed a mission statement. And this went through an extensive ideation and then revision process. So as it stands today, the mission for Animal Shelter would be that the Santa Cruz County Animal Shelter makes Santa Cruz County healthier and safer by providing humane care, prevention-focused support, and practical education that promotes the well-being of animals and people. Driving work of the shelter. Their vision, we envision Santa Cruz County Animal Shelter as a trusted, compassionate, and welcoming community partner where animals thrive and people feel supported, informed, and respected. I'm going to talk about values for a minute. This takes a little bit longer. So the value statement is meant to inform not only the values that are informing kind of the work that the shelter does with their external partners, members of the community, you, but it also is informing the work that they do in the shelter together as a staff with their volunteers and with their partners. So this was co-created with staff, volunteers, the foundation. So I'm going to read through it. Bear with me for just a moment. Santa Cruz County Animal Shelter's values reflect what matters most to us and guide how we care for animals, serve Santa Cruz County, and work together. First, lead with care. We act with empathy and compassion, committing to humane treatment and making safe, responsible choices in every interaction and decision. Serve our county with respect. We serve the animals and people of Santa Cruz County with respect and understanding, so our community can turn to us for welcoming, accessible support. Work together. We work as one team of staff and volunteers in partnership with the JPA, local leaders, and community partners, because better outcomes for animals and people are a shared responsibility. Build trust. We communicate clearly and honestly about what we do, what we stand for, and why decisions are made. And we hold ourselves accountable to our commitments. Learn, share, and improve. We learn together, share what we know, and use evidence and experience to improve outcomes for animals and the community. Before I move on to strategic priorities, I just want to give you a moment. If you have any comments or questions about the mission, vision, or values so far. Also happy to go backwards if that's helpful. Or you can thumbs up me.
Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Strategic priorities, we've settled on four that would drive the strategic plan over the next 3 to 5 years. Those four priorities are center community trust, strengthen our team, prioritize prevention, and ensure access and outreach. For each of these priorities, I'm now going to walk through a brief definition, and then within the definition, there's a set of objectives that would drive the work forward more intentionally. Number one, center community trust. What we mean by that is build lasting public trust by communicating plainly and consistently about what the animal shelter is, what it does, and how decisions are made. What would that look like for actual work and for them to inform, as you remember the pyramid, the top? So treat every interaction as an opportunity to build trust, especially in difficult moments, which the animal shelter sees many, through communication and openness to feedback. Get ahead of misinformation by making accurate, reliable information easy to find, access, and share. And then use data to understand how we're doing, report honestly to our community, and make smarter decisions about where to focus. Number two, strengthen our team. What that means here is enhance and improve the systems, support, and culture that enable staff and volunteers to deliver effective, consistent, humane service. From an objective standpoint, that's giving staff and volunteers the tools, technology, and training they need to do their work effectively, efficiently, and well. Establish clear policies, procedures, and decision pathways that reduce ambiguity, free up time, and create consistency for staff, volunteers, and the public. Strengthen the volunteer experience with clear onboarding, various pathways to contribute, and regular feedback that honors their efforts. I'll just say briefly, this one in particular really was informed by engagement with staff and volunteers. They helped us really understand what they need in order to continue to do work that is, in their mind, you know, can be, I'm sure all of you well understand, can be really draining and challenging work in dealing with animals and the community. And so this is really about supporting them to be able to support animals in the community in a meaningful way. Prioritizing prevention. That means promoting animal well-being and community safety by concentrating on prevention, early support, and practical resources. What that would look like is working to expand affordable, convenient access to spay and neuter, vaccines, microchipping, and related services through the animal shelter and partnerships. The animal shelter, as you know, does not do this alone. They work with a lot of partners to achieve these kinds of objectives, and so it's continuing to expand that work. Make alternatives to surrender consistent and easy to navigate, allowing people to keep their animals when it's safe to do so. Gary talks about this in his brief comment as well. Focusing on education that helps people resolve issues early, access and understand resources, and reduce repeat concerns so that the same people aren't coming to the shelter over and over and over again for the exact same thing. You want to miss that. Stay ready for high demand periods, emergencies, and disruptions by clarifying and coordinating, foster capacity, partner roles, and rapid response resources. This is building on already successful work that's happening at the shelter. And in conjunction with the county resources and disaster planning. And then finally, number four, ensure access and outreach. Ensure every person in Santa Cruz County can access the animal shelter services with dignity and addressing perennial and emerging challenges. There are some things that are always going to be challenging, and there's new ones that pop up, and so we want to be able to handle those. Objectives here is make services easy to navigate for everyone with reliable interpretation, clear materials, and respectful and welcoming interactions. partner with trusted community organizations to reach people where they are and connect them to available support, again, building on what's already been going on, but continuing and growing that work. Develop focused strategies for Watsonville, South County, and Mountain communities that reflect their specific needs and circumstances. I have learned through this process those are very different than what the needs are immediately in the city of Santa Cruz. And so really focusing on that. Use data to identify gaps in who we're reaching and adjust partnerships and resources to close them, close those gaps. And then develop a realistic phased facilities plan for our Santa Cruz and the Watsonville shelters that supports equitable service across the county. This is a lot to share verbally and with you in such a short period of time. I apologize for that. But I want to give space to, I'm happy to go backwards and walk through them or look at them, give you a chance to comment, ask questions.
This is great. I guess one of the questions I have, particularly in the context of the comments and as well as the next decision around budget, is these are really great objectives, and I guess I want to check the understanding. I know there's going to be a process of taking this out, getting more feedback, so I'm just going to give this feedback now. You can dial the level of action to any of these objectives based on what resources are available. And so that's, I think, I just would want to be really clear, because you can have the Cadillac version of this, or you can have the
scooter.
The scooter. Yes. But it's just, in this role, and reading that and knowing there's such a range of ways to implement that, I just would want to make it very clear from my perspective that those conversations have to happen. Mm-hmm. Because, and you may choose that it is Cadillac on one of these objectives and scooter on another, mm-hmm. just given the relative need. But I think it's just important for everyone to understand that not everything's going to be platinum. We are struggling with what we're doing today. But that was just, I think, a comment I had on this structure. The other aspect would be around,
I can go back. Here's number one. Just take a second.
Yeah, so it was around the objectives and still come to me. Maybe there's some comments and questions. But
yeah.
I can, it's very quickly giving me. You were studying an operating environment that I can really quickly imagine how you're going to implement. It is not so out of reach in terms of what you're going to do. So if somebody's done a lot of public sector strategic planning, what I'm seeing is really solid in the fact that you can turn stuff up and down. It's a good approach.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question about, so with these objectives, when do they become activities that, to your point, how do we prioritize those in the face of what the funding available is? And because, again, that variable is going to be based on prioritization. So sort of two questions, how do those objectives become activities? And then secondarily, how are those activities then prioritized, and who is involved in that prioritization? I'm assuming it's staff recommendations to the board, and then that power for funding. So I know that's a little ahead of where we're at with the process. I'm just curious if you could speak to activities
there. Thank you for jumping ahead to the next slide. And I'll also say I think that there's a part of that that we know right now, and part of that that is continued will need to be known. So in terms of where we're headed, we are going to have a community input session that's going to be virtual. I'll leave that on Zoom. It will be synchronous, so I'll take questions then, but we'll also be recording it so we can share it more widely for people that can't join. And then as part of that process, we'll include a survey that's asking people for their feedback, including prioritizing which of these you know, it feels most important to you. We'll also be learning where people are chiming in from, so that we'll be able to have a better understanding of who's involved in that input process. In terms of your question about prioritization and moving to activity, we'll be having a management team working session in July, and that really will be focusing on activities as well as metrics of progress. Notice that I'm not saying metrics of success here. To your point, really trying to think about how can we make progress here, knowing that the objectives that we set, very few of them read as checks. You know, there's things that are ongoing that we continue to need to work on, and I think that I really would like to credit Amber and Helen for really focusing on capacity and prioritization through this process, pulling me back from using a lot of language that was about, you know, growth and expand. And they're like, we need to think about that more carefully. And so I really want to credit them for that in this process. As part of that working session, the deliverable will be a 6-month plan. I don't believe that you can implement a strategic plan all at once, right? We need to pick which ones are we going to focus on first and how do they scaffold to what we will work on next. That will be kind of the wrap-up piece of my engagement with this process. But that should, I hope, set the animal shelter on a road to be able to get started and imagine what happens after we've started. So that they can move forward with intentionality and effectiveness. Does that answer anything else you want
to have a follow-up to that?
Awesome. Okay.
So for the community input session, I think that's great. It sounds like that's where you'll be gathering some prioritization information.
Yes.
And then the next step would be the management team working session.
Yes.
Where there's prioritization for funding, and then that's also, I assume, where staff recommendations on priorities will come in. So one of the things in this process that I would, you know, encourage us to think about and sure you already have is making sure that at those first community input sessions, that there is some expectation management with the community, who's going to ask for what the community's priorities are. That may be a touch point, and that may be the only touch point we get with some people. And then if we don't implement those priorities, they don't know that there was staff recommendation, board discussion, and that's why. So I think I'm sure it's embedded in there somewhere, but with those community input sessions, it can be made really clear that, you know, we're taking your input, we will meld it with staff recommendation and board and budget to come up with your final set of priorities. Your conveyance of your priorities to the community is not necessarily what will end up being the activities in the first tier of that strategic plan launch.
Yes.
And also back to your comments about expectation setting around a strategic plan doesn't start and end in 1 year, that it's all the beginning of student improvement, maintenance, the language that is in growth, expansion, that sort of thing. If that can also be part of those community input sessions, I think that would really help to build trust with our community about what our process is and how we're doing this, so people don't think that whatever is said there is what's going to happen.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you so much. And just to say, I think that that's 100% why centering community trust is priority number one. And I think that's very much in line with what we've been talking about and making sure that that the community can trust right from the beginning of the strategic plan, that that's where we're going. And I'll just also say, I think one of the things we've really centered in the process has been making sure that the staff, the volunteers, the nonprofits that we've been partnering with see their input in the plan. They certainly, feedback that we got from the mission, vision, values was we see ourselves here, we see what we shared with you here, we see the priorities that we communicated, they're showing up in this work, and that was really important in our approach to the plan.
Yeah, this is fantastic. I just want to thank you all. This was very thorough and moving process, and great
outcome. Thank you.
Okay. So I can remember.
Oh,
the other thing I think, and this again is very likely embedded in your process moving forward, align your current work.
Yeah.
Right? Just really take the time, and you're doing those things now, but start with aligning your current work.
Absolutely.
I totally appreciate Michelle, who's talking about expectation management. And
that yourself in the plan and get in that in those public settings. Here's our process, and I hope you do plan for that closing loop.
Yes.
Because that being able for the public to see what is represented in that final, that this first 6 months is valuable. I do totally concur with that idea of like plan 6 months. You can think about longer goals.
Yes.
And I was starting to write incremental, and I don't think that's the right point. It's really it's about being adaptive. Right?
Yeah.
You're getting yourselves into the work, thinking about it, and then you do that plan, study, act, adjust. You know, plan, do, study, act. You do that PDSA. So you do that 6 months, and you come back, and does that make sense?
Yeah.
And you rework for the next 6 months.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like a really good approach, really positive.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have one. Again, wait for the emails. Just a logistical question: when you talk about community outreach, how are you intending to reach the community so they know to show up for training for this? As somebody I have my own struggles with that, where I have this intention to have community input, but they need to know to show up. So
yeah.
What does that look like for you guys?
That's a great question. Part of what's been informing us is we also spoke with Library, who recently completed their strategic plan and did a lot of work in that area. That, in part, is reaching out to partners who especially are engaged deeply with different pockets of the community. Helen, do you want to add, or Amber?
I wonder also if we have any part in that, being that we're community partners.
I would love to
reach out to the, to various communities, so making sure that they know that they have the opportunity to show up. If they choose not to, then they understand that their struggles are not going to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that it's available.
First of all, I would love to have you all engaged and in kind of trying to get the word out to any pockets of the community that you feel are important and that you have access to. So I think what we're going to try to do is get materials together that simply announce the event itself as soon as we can and get them out to you all so you can share them. We'll share them with probably the County Board of Supervisors as well so that they can hopefully share them outward. We will certainly use our foundation. They have amazing contacts in the community. And as well as even our officers our nonprofit partners service providers that we work with regularly. So probably everyone from HPHP and at Coral Street to all of the health clinic partners around the county and to try to reach people who have any kind of The tricky thing for us is that we know that this is like everybody, right? Like so many people have interests in animals and in animals in their lives. I think sometimes we don't reach everybody who has that interest. I think we reach the people who have the capacity to add this to their plate. And so we want to try to present this in a way that allows people to participate. We want to try to emphasize that this is like a brief engagement that could be very impactful. So if we can hear from people who we might not otherwise hear from, that's super important. And we want to try to make it as accessible as we can and try to get the word out as soon as we can about the online engagement. And we'll have to figure out how we have some work to do to figure out where we might be able to provide some more access points, and the libraries may be a good helper for that. I'm also well open to ideas or thoughts. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say we also have been, the invitation language is being translated into multiple languages to be able to reach, again, needing that kind of accessible and welcoming to non-English speakers who are important stakeholders as part of the animal scene.
And what if there's spaces in community spaces for people that don't have access, they don't understand, so just zooming in to something, right?
Yeah.
So to where it can be accessible.
Yeah. Well,
and
that's also, thank you. Mm-hmm. And that's also where the recording, instead of like you have to zoom in, like here's the link, here's the survey, you don't have to have Zoom to be able to watch the and trying to keep it short,
yeah.
Pretty similar to the length I've been with you right now. to be able to stay concise, stay focused, and allow people to spend 15 minutes if they want to watch this video, and then get into the survey and get their feedback. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anyone else? Well, if you have more questions, obviously Amber and Helen are your best point of contact. Thank you. Really appreciate your input.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the next
You're a pro now, huh?
Oral report slides are shorter than usual. We're focused on the budget presentation. So for April and May of 2026, April is Volunteer Appreciation Month, so we celebrated that with a vegetarian barbecue at the shelter, and shelter and volunteers and community supporters were also recognized in April by the Volunteer Center, the County Board of Supervisors, and the Chamber of Commerce. Which was fantastic. Nancy Newby, who's a shelter volunteer and also the president of the Shelter Foundation, was recognized. So was Karen Skemp, who accepted honors on behalf of the Shelter's Dog Enrichment Team, which does amazing work. And then Adara Paterno, who has been a longtime partner and supporter and volunteer at the shelter, who's the owner of the Santa Adarius Brewery, was recognized for her many contributions to the shelter and all over the county and other community programs. So that was some great celebration that happened. The foundation, of course, continues to coordinate regular community engagement and fundraising activities, like Gary outlined in his comments, including the Cuddle Connections program at the shelter, which sort of brings seniors into the shelter to just hang out for a little bit with some of our animals and have a little cuddle time, which is a really cool connection into the community. And potentially cultivates donations and support of the shelter, and then also, of course, lots of tabling events all around the community. The other foundation activity that's been going on, the Positivity Bucks program just celebrated its first year in existence, and that's a program where the foundation sponsors $200 vouchers. Thank you. Vouchers to work with a positive trainer when someone adopts a dog from us. And so that just did its first full year, completed its first full year, and 72 dogs and adopters have been, I think I had 78 in here, but it's 72 adopted dogs and their new families have been served through that program so far. And then the foundation also contracted with the humane educator, Celine San Luis, who has developed a set of presentations and lesson plans for young students integrated into California curriculum requirements. So these are programs Celine or one of our animal control officers or a volunteer potentially goes out into schools to do humane education programs in the schools. And then also the foundation is working very hard, continues very hard work developing plans for the Tales of Hope Gala in September. And then, let's see, we have hired a new animal control officer, Ivy. She starts actually this week, so she'll be going through post-training next week. She's training at the shelter this week. So that's super exciting. We've been waiting a long time to fill out our animal control team. a longtime clinic volunteer and intern, Sequoia Fellenbaum, actually departed in May, very sadly, but also very happily because she went to veterinary school in Minnesota. That's where she's headed. That's her longtime dream. We do have one RVT candidate that is scheduled to be interviewed this week. We're hoping for the best. Trying to get a new RVT on board has been extremely challenging, and if we can't bring someone on board, it's going to be a challenging summer for the clinic to keep up with just in-house spay-neuter appointments keeping up with the flow of animals. So, crossing our fingers for that. If we can't make a successful hire, we will keep that position open and continue trying to recruit. The RVT position is extremely challenging to fill. We do have one opening for a full-time animal care worker right now. That position is posted now, and I can't remember what the deadline is for closing, if you remember off the top of your head.
I think we had it for 1 week. We have candidates already and people in mind.
Potential internal part-time candidates for that position. The annex now has a new roof that has been completed. Thank you very much for authorizing the funding for that. So we now have a secure and watertight roof on the annex. There's a little bit of final cleanup work to do, but that's about it. And then at the end of May, the very end of May, we were contacted by Linda and Nick, who are pictured in the center bottom right there. They're a couple. They adopted two kittens from us back in 2018. In recent years, they've started to become really strong supporters of the shelter, and they contacted me at the end of May and said they had a vehicle that they wanted to donate. And I said, are you kidding me? And it is a beautiful Honda CRV from 2012. It only has 34,000 miles on it, and it's absolutely fantastic. So we will, I think you saw in the consent agenda, we are going to retire our old BMW, who's not operational anymore, and then we will take on this new beautiful vehicle that will be more helpful for moving people and equipment and animals around. So super excited about that. Let's see. There we go. We did have some great success with our Healthy Pets for All clinics. We had, on April 24th, we served 146 dogs and 43 cats. And then in May, we had 67 dogs and 29 cats served at our at the VFW location. And then we also, our next HPFA event will be in Felton on July 10th. We're going to skip June, but we do the HPFA clinics 9 times a year, so not quite every single month. This time we're skipping June. And then we did a special thing in April because we had some spay-neuter grant funding available to spend, and we knew we wouldn't have clinic capacity to take in to do spay-neuter for community animals in our clinic over the summer. We did a special very low-cost cat spay-neuter clinic on April 16th. So it was kind of like an animal balance clinic, but it was just a single day, and it was only for cats. And so the clinic did amazing work, and Leslie, our volunteer coordinator, did a fantastic job recruiting volunteers to do a special surgery day just for cats, and we did 38 spay-neuter surgeries for community cats for $15 each. So we have a small amount in there just to try to make sure that people show up for their appointments, but hopefully that's a low enough price point that allows more people to get in the door and get this done. And we are applying some more of this grant funding. This is from the Tipping Point grant that some of you may be familiar with, but we got it 2 years ago. We have some funding we need to send down. And so we are going to apply more of this funding at the end of the month for our next animal balance clinic. We've made the price point for that very low again, so it's $15 for cats, and we've brought it down to $129 for dogs to try to get more people in the door at the lower price point for this next animal balance clinic. So that clinic actually just filled. It finished filling this weekend, so we just closed registration for that. So it's a nice early fill, so people were looking for that price point, which is great, and we're looking forward to holding that clinic at the end of June on the 26th, 27th, and 28th, 26th, 27th, and 28th of June. And then for our statistics at the shelter, during April and May, we took in 901 live, non-wild, non-euthanasia-requested animals in April and May. That's 275 more than we took in during the last period of February and March, but that is 112 fewer than we took in during April and May last year, so that's a nice sign of some positive progress. We adopted out 54 more cats than we did last period, as our cat and kitten population has started to increase for the spring and summer season. We did adopt out 5 more dogs than we did last period. Our adoption rate did drop a little bit, from 52.5% of our overall outcomes to just 44.6% of our total outcomes. Dog adoptions have slowed down quite a bit. We just had a big adoption event on Saturday, and we sent home 22 cats and only 5 dogs. So even though adoptions were free, we didn't have many takers for adoptions. So, and I think that's a reflection of just how secure people are feeling at this time and whether or not they can take on the commitment of a dog at this time. But that's just me, you know, guessing. Let's see, we did return 221 pets to their owners. That's consistent at about 32.2% of our outcomes. 32.6% this period. We transferred 102 animals. Many of those were underage kittens to partner organizations. Our transfers for dogs have slowed a little bit. I'm not sure whether any of you have heard much about the situation in Northern California with a very tragic situation with a so-called rescue group. Thankfully, we have not been involved or engaged with that rescue organization, Miranda's Rescue, but that has caused everybody to sort of slow down a little bit, and we also know that's also caused a bunch of local regional shelters to not have as much space to take in animals as transfers. And so that's been like everybody's kind of pressing the brakes on dog transfers at this moment. But we still held pretty steady in terms of our overall outcome percentage for transfers because cats and kittens went up. And we do have a great new partner, Kitten Corner, that's a good solid transfer partner for cats and kittens in the area. Humane euthanasia, for medical and behavioral reasons, increased from 7.8% of our total outcomes to 10.3% this period. That is sort of an expected increase at this time of the year as we take in a lot more very medically fragile animals, very young puppies and kittens who may have been abandoned or lost their moms, and so our euthanasia rates go up a bit in the spring and summer months. As of May 31st, we had 223 animals in care and 69 animals more in foster care. So that is our oral report. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
Thank you.
No public, no comments, right? I think we're good.
I didn't know when you opened up.
Oh yeah, for each item, we can take public comments.
And
thank you.
Then we'll move on to the next item. The Center for the General Manager's recommendation for the fiscal year 2024.
Okay, so for this item, I'm going to try not to just read the item. Basically, we developed a proposed budget. We provided now 4 different scenarios: 0% increase in member contributions, 3%, 5%, or 7%. The staff would like to recommend a 5% increase in member contributions, with awareness that this is a very difficult budget year for everyone, for all of the members. But also trying to recognize that we want to make sure that we have that we're in not too risky a position in terms of our reserves in case of unexpected events or emergencies. So we do recognize that any increase is very challenging at this time for all the members. Each of these proposals does support status quo levels of service and is predicted to rely on the use of unrestricted reserve balance funds or unanticipated donations to cover increased net costs. So basically, whether the board approves a 0% increase in member contributions or a 7% increase in member contributions, we will have to dip in, we are expecting we'll have to dip into our reserves to cover some of our expenses, and that's because of significant increases in our, mostly in our salaries and budgets line items. So, as this first slide outlines, we just first of all want to say that the shelter is a dynamic, complex, and trusted community agency. Our shelters are most effective as inviting spaces for the public and community, not dark, hidden repositories for unwanted animals. Thankfully, our volunteers and good planning in the past has led to a good inviting atmosphere and environment. We continue to grow with the needs and expectations of the community, and we appreciate JPA members' support to meet the evolving demands of animal welfare at this challenging time. So as we have discussed, our primary budget driver is salaries and benefits. We've had a number of negotiated increases that went through last year, pushing salary and benefits up by $170,927 over this current year's budget. Our vacancies for mid-level positions in 25 and 26 did give us some unexpected savings and a surplus this current year that's about to wrap up. But we don't anticipate that we will have that same kind of salary savings or a surplus next year, no matter which option the members go for. We have filled our administrative analyst and our volunteer coordinator positions, and filling those positions has vastly improved our ability to meet administrative needs and to start moving forward on some of the things that we've talked about and strategic priorities and so on, of trying to get more of our policies and procedures documented and updated. Helen's done a fantastic job of working with the staff leadership to move some of those initiatives forward, and Leslie, our volunteer coordinator, has been doing great things to update our volunteer program so that we can make better use of, but still in line with SEIU agreements, to be able to have our volunteers contribute in very meaningful ways to the shelter's operations. Our long vacant animal control officer position is going to fill this month, as mentioned, and we're still recruiting for an RVC. Filling those positions, those are very high impact positions. I cannot overstate how important having an additional officer will be, but it will take a little time to get that officer trained in. And then again, we still haven't filled our RVC position. We're continuing to try to fill those gaps with extra help, and we will continue to do that until we can fill that RVC position. But again, kind of incredible gap to not have that full-time RVT in place. The clinic has been doing great, but it is a very real struggle week to week to get the clinical needs met. So to discuss, we had a question from the last meeting about reserves, and so we've tried to clarify that a little bit. From 2004 to 2010, we received some state-mandated cost reimbursements from the state. We call those SB 90 funds, and the total amount over those years was $985,000. And then in 2014, we received a very generous trust, the Muriel Butler Trust, $1.2 million. And those funds were sort of placed into what we term our reserves. So those are basically our spendable reserves. Dana, correct me if I'm not using the right terminology, those reserves have been tapped in 9 of the last 12 budget years to cover gaps. The last 3 years, we have actually had a surplus, and we have added that surplus back into those reserve funds. I want to assure the board that we will continue to be fiscally conservative and responsible, and we really do just sort of fund our day-to-day operations. There's nothing fancy going on at the shelter. We don't have any money in travel or in training, really. We just try to piece together where we can to meet our needs. But we do anticipate a reserve balance of $1,151,959 by this fiscal year end. If the board goes with a 0% member increase, that gap will increase, and sorry, we will have a budget gap, and our reserve balance will be sort of gobbled up to the tune of $708,000. So that is a significant chunk of that reserve if the board were to approve a 0% increase. And the 0% increase is a little bit confusing, so that's what we'll talk about in just a minute. We do have a goal of trying to maintain a reserve that would allow us to function for up to 60 days in case of some kind of an emergency. That is a recommendation from sort of national financial experts that's a good formula to try to have. I believe the county operates on a 10% or so it's a little lower reserve balance, which I also understand is reasonable. So a common practice is to maintain at least a 10% reserve balance. For us, that would be $698,000 for the coming year. So this little graph just shows the number of operational days we would have under those various member increase scenarios. So if we went with a 0% increase, we'd have 18 days of reserves. At 3%, we'd have 26 days of reserves. 5%, we'd have 31 days of reserves. And 7%, we would have 36 days of reserves. All of those, as you can see, fall short of that 60-day goal. The 7% gets us a little bit closer to the 10%-ish goal. So this, again, our goal has been to continue slowly increasing member contributions to move away from relying on reserves as we did for 12 years before I got here, and to try to meet our understanding of the charter agreement, which is to fully fund the shelter. I also acknowledge that the charter statement is kind of open to interpretation. The charter statement just says the authority shall operate only under an approved fiscal year budget. The authority may not operate at a deficit, and the parties shall pay for the entire operation of the authority. Again, I recognize that is sort of open to interpretation. There's nothing in there that talks about core services or mandated services, so that's just something to be aware of, but we have tried to gradually increase member contributions to try to reduce our reliance on reserves over the years. So this just shows the increase that we've seen from members over the last 10 years. This chart outlines what each jurisdiction or each member's contribution is under each of the different percentage increases looks like. You can see that the total goes up at the bottom, of course. The total contributions go up, and you can see what each member's contributions look like. The confusing thing, if the super confusing thing, is that there's an adjustment to this, to these amounts, and there was an adjustment applied last year and 3 years prior because there was an error in the equation figuring out what the different jurisdictions pay in each year. And that error went on for a couple of years before it was corrected. I believe in 2024 is when we caught, just before the 24-25 year, or 23-24, just before going into the 23-24 fiscal year, we caught that there had been an error that happened in 2018, I think, in figuring out member contributions, and so the board agreed to this plan to adjust it. It's a 5-year plan, and it's a flat rate each year for each member. So then that gets, we do our complicated thing with for each jurisdiction where we figure out the calls for service. We look at the calls for service during the previous years and find an average there and figure out what each member would contribute. And then we do this adjustment afterward, and that's a flat amount. So what that ends up looking like for this year, what I wanted to show was that due to that correction formula, this is what this looks like compared to this year that we're just wrapping up. So I'll just use the Capitola as an example. In 25-26, Capitola put forward $147,117 as their member contribution. If we go with a 0% member increase, that will mean that Capitola will pay $3,000 less in 26-27 because of the correction. If the board adopts a 3% increase, Capitola would pay $909 more in 26-27. If the board adopts a 5% change, then Capitola would pay $3,579 more. And a 7% change for Capitola would be a $6,250 increase to their overall, to the contribution that they paid this year. Does that make sense? Does anyone have any questions about that that I may be able to clarify? So I just wanted to provide that as a little more context. I know that the numbers are confusing, and all of the equations are a bit confusing and convoluted, but I'm open to any questions if you have them.
Just walk me through Watsonville.
Yes, so Watsonville for 25-26, the year that we're just wrapping up, Watsonville contributed $1,020,855. If the board adopts a 0% change to member contributions, then Watsonville will be contributing $51,000 more than you contributed this year. So the $1,020,000 plus $50,198. Does that make sense? If the board adopts a 3% change, that would be $83,000 more. If the board adopts a 5%, that would be $105,000 more.
Okay. And then just walk me through the allocation adjustment. So at the 0%, that $51,000 is really due to the correcting it all.
Correct. The correction, again, let's see. How does that work, Dana? My brain's going to go blank for a minute. Essentially, because of the equation, so the equation for figuring out the contributions is based on the calls for service, which for Watsonville increased significantly in the last few years, and so that brought the average calls for service for Watsonville up, which makes your contribution a little bit higher. And then
by population as well.
And it's also by population. So that's the other thing that would lead to an increase for the Watsonville jurisdiction.
And then you take out the...
Then we take out the correction, right, which would, for Watsonville, each year the correction is to subtract $6,370. And that's where we land with those final numbers. At the bottom of this chart, those last two lines talk about what that leaves us in reserve. So the impact in reserve line is what each of those percentage scenarios, how much that takes out of more that takes out of reserve. And then at the very bottom, that shows you what would be left over in our reserves under each of the scenarios.
On that note, I just want to tie together this slide with the other slide on how that 5% proposal would result, what level of operating reserve would be left in. My understanding based on this slide, the slide with the light number, is that you would be at 31 days at this level?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And this is a way in the lead question. Clearly, animal services are open more than 5 days a week.
Correct. 7 days a week.
And I guess I'm curious. Is it, when you come up with that number of a 31-day reserve, is that based on an app? I mean, is the average cost on the weekend the same as the average cost during the week? I'm just like, how much reserve capacity do you actually get with that number? Is it really, that would cover 31 days, that's it? Or is it, and this is such a leading question, so.
Yeah.
I'm just curious if it
Dana might be able to
get this a little bit further than a month.
Yeah, and Dana might be able to answer that question a little bit better. Sorry to put you on the spot.
Yeah, it's averaged out weekends, weekdays, all count the same, 30 to 30 days.
Okay. That's helpful.
Yeah, we have a lot of staff that are there even when it's closed, like in the mornings and stuff like that, so it's just, it ends up being fairly comparable.
Okay. Yeah, and the Watsonville shelter is closed 2 days a week, but the Santa Cruz shelter is currently open 7 days a week. The fact is we always have to have the majority of our staff there every day because there are animals there every day that require care. We have to have some clinical staff available each day, and we have to have animal control staff available each day. So it is pretty much a 365,
24/7 operation. Well, we're hoping you never get into a situation where you need to come to that person, right? That's the intention, but just as we do that balance point of increasing the members' fees with still having appropriate fiduciary decision making around not having enough money if you need it because something weird happens. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to sort of better understand what is 31 days for the
patient. Yeah. And I think another point to make is that if something weird happens, we will probably still have a whole bunch of animals to take care of on a daily basis, which will always require a certain level of staffing that is pretty close to what our normal level of staffing is. And so that's just the reality. Like if we have to close, that doesn't mean that we don't have staff there, that we just, you just go dark and it's quiet and nobody's around.
Right.
So that we will always have staff that need to be compensated. And so that's the biggest driver of our budget and our operations all the time. Michelle?
Yeah, just to follow up on that you were on the board, has that ever been talked about? Because I think, the community or the board may think, okay, we can reduce our costs by having Monday closed or whatever. But has that ever been talked out for the board and for the community to understand what the actual reduction in cost would be with the reduction of the day? Because it may not be significant enough to even entertain.
Right.
That would be an interesting thing to be able to share publicly. That's not the answer, or it is, I don't know, but that's like if 75% of staff are still coming,
right?
Having the community understand that and why they need to support their reduction services versus expand their budget, and that would be part of that answer to the community.
Mm-hmm. And I know that there was consideration to closing one day of the week at the Santa Cruz shelter just before I arrived. But again, I think the percentage of staff that still needs to be coming in, even when the shelter is closed, is closer to 85%, I would say. That really it's just a couple of administrative people and a few, our small client services team that doesn't, for example, when we're closed on holidays, the only people who don't come in are on those days are generally client services staff and a couple of administrative staff. So the impact of closing on a day of the week is not significant at all. But costing it out, I don't know if that's been done.
Yeah,
for
just be able to share that
yeah.
story because I think people don't understand operations like this are a lot lighter if it's closed.
Right. Right. The thing that would allow us to actually reduce, potentially reduce some personnel costs would be to reduce our capacity for holding animals, which is, we always try to move animals through as quickly as we can so that we can handle them efficiently and effectively. What that generally means is either not having as much space available, which puts all of the animals at higher risk of disease, or euthanizing more animals more quickly or for lesser reasons, which generally the community is not super happy about. So that's, you know, we're sort of at the margins all the time.
And I just think that would be a good part of the story to be at first be able to tell as we make budgetary decisions for every year. I know that some jurisdictions are asked for budgets this year and not this year. So if we try to safety-proof the operation, that could end up being part of the story that we're able to tell when we make those decisions for the why.
Yeah, and I think that was precisely why I wanted to try to clearly lay out what this actually looks like, because I know that many of the members have been asked to do status quo budgets, but the reality for status quo budgets is that a status quo budget is not necessarily a 0% increase in our case because of this equation and the correction. So a status quo budget for many of the members is more at the 3% member contribution rate as opposed to a 0%, if that makes sense. The shelter's budget, of course, also is a fairly small budget. So, you know, comparatively speaking to some of the other departments that some of the member agencies are thinking about or looking at. So that means that any change is like a kind of a bigger hit potentially, to us, whereas it may not be as big a hit to some of the members. But again, the members are very diverse, and the budgets for the members are very diverse. So that's why I wanted to try to clearly lay out what this looks like compared to the current year member contributions with all of the other weird equations wrapped in. So.
I've got two more. Can you remind me, I know you told me this already, can you remind me what the required 4% contingency is, the amount that's built into this budget?
Yes, let's see.
Do you have it quickly, Dana?
The number that I'm recalling, which could be completely wrong, is like about $270,000. And I just wanted to draw that to the board's attention because, just so you know, in addition to the reserves that are sitting there, there's a 4% contingency built into the budget, which, like this year, you didn't have to tap into, is what I'm recalling. And tapped into a much smaller amount. So that's actually rolling in. So when you think about what's happening in the next fiscal year, you do have appropriately some both and 4% contingency should the organization need it. And I know my assumption you start tapping into contingency, you're talking to your board, but just that's another, I think, really smart fiscal practice to have in there. And then, you know, if you don't have to use it, you can utilize it next fiscal year.
Correct.
Fund it, you know, whatever. But that we are funding that with our member contributions.
Yes, on a regular basis, there is a 4% of our budget automatically goes into a contingency fund, which is, did you find the?
Yeah, it's $280,230.
Yeah, so that is funded with member contributions. And it's part of our budget on an annual basis.
I'm sorry. Oh, that's been on yours since I can't remember. So then, you know, in thinking about the reserve scenarios, I think to that point, is that factored in with your reserve days? You know, 4%, that's not factored in.
That would be in addition to the reserve days.
I think we had Dana go over something too, because this question came up last time about like the difference between contingency and reserve, if that's helpful to have her go over that.
Yeah, well,
everybody's
interested. I can go over that as well if I can find it on my notes. So the appropriations for contingencies are they're budgeted funds that are set aside to cover urgent, unforeseen expenditures or emergencies that arise during the fiscal year, such as natural disasters, legal costs, or unanticipated department shortfalls. We are required to budget 4% of total expenditures for appropriations for contingencies. And these reserves are typically included in general funds to provide financial flexibility without needing immediate separate legislative action. Whereas our unrestricted fund balance, or our reserves, the spendable portion of this unrestricted fund balance, or the residual, spendable money that's remaining in a government's or an organization's general fund after all specific restrictions, commitments, or assignments have been accounted for. So our reserves, again, consist of the Muriel Butler Trust, which came in 2014, and the SB 90 funds. So those were two one-time funds, and the decision was made when those came in to put those into a reserve fund for us. And those have been used to address budget deficits as needed. So that is sort of our most flexible reserve funding, or funding that we can apply for unexpected things. So it's a flexible financial safety net to cover unexpected expenses, revenue shortfalls, or daily cash flow needs. Excuse me. And at the end of this fiscal year, because we will have a little bit of surplus this year, we will roll that surplus into it, and that balance will be $1,050,362 in the reserves here.
Michelle, I did my math right. That additional 280, if you were thinking about it, reserve days, that's about 14 days. Okay. So, not that helpful, yeah. And then, can I ask a question on the reserves? So, I may have missed it in the packet, I apologize if I did. What have the reserves been at over the last few years?
What the reserves been at over the last few years? So,
either percentage or number of days. Do you like kind of become a practice, best practice, clearly?
Historically. So basically, I mean, our reserves, I would have to pull up those budget spreadsheets from past years to see that exact amount, those exact amounts. Again, we have been able to add, we have had surpluses the last 3 years, and they have ranged from, I think in this past year, it's about 16,000. 16,000 is going to roll into reserves this year. Last year it was higher. It's like 120 something something. And then as far as the fund balances or the reserve balances, I'm sorry, I don't have that off the top of my head from previous years before I got here.
Question, not comedy. And then this is to consider and approve in the same day. I'm curious if historically there's ever been budget presentation and approval at a later meeting, because I think this is one of the logistical challenges of having to review the details and approve on the same day.
Since we started presenting budget information in our February meeting and then presented a proposed budget in April, generally the June meeting is when there's actually a vote and a decision made. So I think, I don't know, going back more than 3 years, whether there has ever been it's always been approved at the June meeting.
Yeah, so you need to load it into the finance enterprise gap so that we can start.
Well, and, I mean, you did give direction. You like come back at a zero and stuff when you presented your proposed. So it's not, we have seen these numbers. But we did raise some questions.
So are we prepared to vote on the recommendation?
We should make a public comment first.
Public comment?
Yeah, I do just have to make a comment on sort of a reality check with regards to reserves, just for quick context, I'm also the vice president of the board of directors for PFA's community dental care, former past president of that organization as well. To just quickly, PFA's has gone from the last 3 or 4 years, we went from 2 clinics to now 5 clinics in the county, but about 12 million to about 18 million now. This reserve issue is also something we considered when we went through that expansion in the last several years. We consider our reserves as an opportunity to dip in, to use those reserves for expansion, building expansion. Fortunately, we never had to do that. We would, and from a fiduciary standpoint, I would say to this board, we would never consider and never have considered using reserves as for operating expenses. And for any organization, this organization particularly, to dip into reserves, 9 out of the last 12 years is sort of outrageous from a board fiduciary standpoint. The board, I look at that and say, that's putting the organization at tremendous risk. And I just, yeah, use my experience with the BFA to compare how we might look at that. So that is my only comment about reserves. And look at that. It's easy to look at them as a savings account, but it's really not. It's really, it depends on the orientation of the organization. But from my perspective, and I would argue from best practices against the organization, it should be considered used as operating expenses. And to use it just puts the organization at significant financial risk.
Alright, do we have a motion to vote the recommendation of staff recommendation to 5% increase in number of contributions?
So I'm planning to staff recommendation of 5% increase in number of contributions for fiscal year 26 and approve the budget as presented.
Alright, so we have a motion. Do you want to prepare the second? And we have a second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Thank you.
Okay.
I just wanted to make a comment that while it's, I think we're all facing down to budgets and difficult times and clearly hard because obviously when that's the word we've seen in the significant increase aside from just the increases. But also just want to acknowledge that we're seeing the same thing as we want to know where there's uncontrolled costs, primarily staffing, and so even though it's difficult and it's to get to our budget, I understand that it's something that we're probably
thank you.
I want to make a comment as well. Just this is coming after our budget is done, essentially. So I think there's some time we need to think about moving forward. I think there's going to be some challenges. I speak for myself going back when our budget is complete and this is not factored in. This is going to be
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could concur on that. That last year, this did come after budget, and so we went significantly over what we had budgeted and had to absorb that into the general fund. And so there's some challenge with that again this year. So we can
you know, probably why your sheet isn't like sort of geared in the light book, because it's a tiny with this.
No, I understand.
And with the shifts that happen up here with the board, and you and I have spoken about that, the level of consistency and continuity to be the best service to you, fiscally and otherwise, it's a challenge when you have that rotation and people are able to walk, you know, track it back and have new people up here, right? So, yeah, it just makes it really hard. You know, I know this situation myself, we have city council, we have budget, it's done, right? So these are a way for us to, you know, call this out for the next cycle in a better way, and I'm sort of looking at you like, oh no.
No, I have a comment too. So, as a new person on the board, I mean, you had the previous county representative from our office, was she'd been here a really long time and knows the stuff backwards.
She was very helpful, her and Waffle, because they had this historical right knowledge.
So, I think that's definitely, you're definitely seeing the impact of those changes. And I think putting things like you did in this PowerPoint around that on average, over the last 9 years, there's been a member increase. So it's not out of step with what this board has done. And it's not out of step with what we all experience in our own budget. So I think continuing to provide that longer look as you have different board members will help recreate some of the knowledge that you have to recreate. I want to say it's unlocked. The education you need to do. So just for that stuff. I will say, as someone who sits on several JK boards, this is not a step. I mean, we approved we're doing our budget hearings starting Wednesday. I mean, we knew, like with NetCom 911, you know, that was a huge increase being proposed. And so we've had a notice of these things for a while. So, I mean, I think all of us can also take responsibility working back in the home office to say, this is happening out there. Are you tracking it within whatever contingency you're planning, you're doing in your own budget? I also want to say that we have a responsibility within our roles to be tracking information and taking it back to our budget managers to say, go figure. They have a cost increase. But I mean, half, 24-25 is 15%. I mean, dang.
Yeah, that was a big bump, and help has helped a lot. I will also say that that has been a huge help to our operations and to our ability to keep staff motivated and keep staff at the shelter and build more experience and a more unified team. And has also, you know, helped us with programs for the community that help us to get more community support, and that does directly lead, in our case, to like more donations to the shelter, which helps to offset some of these costs in many ways. So it's all very circular. I also very much appreciate all of the comments about this, and it's definitely been a learning curve for me over the last 3 years. I absolutely hear you, and I know that your budgets are already like, it's like water under the bridge already, and so that's why we tried to make sure that we started presenting stuff in February. We will definitely endeavor to do that again in the coming year to get you more information and more clear information early on. I think thinking about this in terms of, I think this is a helpful thing to really think about, like what does this really look like in terms of how much each member contributes, rather than just flooding you with the same spreadsheets every single time, leading in February, April, and June, to try to really drill down and get more information to you earlier will definitely be one of our tasks for the coming year.
One last comment. Just carry on top board that I would ask for our public safety partners that are in the room as we move forward and we tap public partners in to step in for these meetings, that we let those people that are coming in our place know that this is what they're doing. When they leave that, those initial budget meetings where they're receiving information from you, that they have, they're clued in to know, okay, I need to go back and speak to our financial director, our city manager, our, you know, all the powers that be. Because again, I'll fall back to the fact that I think that at least with 500 people up here, there's that gap of understanding where it really does need to be a direct, this is the time. So that when you come back, you have, you're speaking for the people in your organization that get to make, that have the financial power. Because you're going to continue to see the face up here, but don't presume that because we understand it all the way you do, you're competent. So, just to lobby for your law partners.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, does that take us back to a motion and a vote, or do we?
I think that was just post okay. Discussion. So.
Okay.
Fantastic. Can I get a motion that is
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Just wanted to clarify.
And, okay.
Does that take us back to?
We are opening the adjournment for the public. We have a closed session. So thank you for your comments. Appreciate it.
Adjournment at 12:36.
I think so, yeah. I think we might want to just like hold tables together.